This is Health First with Kathy Hart, available across Canada through the National Campus and Community Radio Association.
We are back with Dr. Kate Room, and there seems to be a sudden popularity of intermittent fasting. We heard in the first part that a little fasting doesn't hurt us.
Well, the popularity does seem to be new. Of course, fasting is something that has been around for a very long time for a variety of reasons. But it has become very popular in recent years, both as a method of weight loss. There are other people who are interested in it for purported anti-aging benefits. And so there's a lot more interest around it now. And of course, anything that gets this popular, there's always some myths and misinformation and things that need to be cleared up.
Okay, so one, is it a myth? You know, we used to think we have to break the fast as soon as we wake to increase metabolic rate. You jump into a big breakfast right away.
Well, that's it. And we've for so long been told that breakfast is the most important meal of the day. And how do we reconcile with that? And it's true that breakfast is the most important meal of the day, but it's more important what you eat for breakfast and not when you eat your breakfast. So that is something to keep in mind. But as well, our concepts of metabolism and what maintains the metabolism and what constitutes a healthy metabolism maybe have been a little bit misguided. For a long time we've been told, well, you should eat every 3 hours for optimum health to maintain mm-hmm. your blood sugar, right? 3 meals and 2 snacks a day.
Mm-hmm.
But the fact is that if you have relatively healthy blood sugar, you should be able to go longer than an hour or two without eating and feel fine, first of all. And second of all, every time you eat, your body produces, it depends on what you eat, but typically it's producing a hormone called insulin, which is encouraging you to store fat. It's also, your body's producing digestive enzymes, regardless of whether you're eating a small meal or a large meal. So this is work to the digestive tract, and it essentially never allows your digestion or certain aspects of your metabolism to rest or change gears from the fat storage and energy storage mode. And so there is something to be said for certain people about going longer between meals.
So it sounds like it's not for everybody then, certain people. Or does it actually help if you do have a little bit of insulin resistance to start stretching out the time?
Well, definitely insulin resistance, which we know is the underlying factor to, of course, type 2 diabetes and a whole host of other conditions and concerns that are quite prominent, even just carrying excess weight and abdominal weight. Obviously, if high insulin levels and overproduction of insulin is an issue, then doing things to reduce your insulin production, such as eating less or going longer between meals, can be potentially beneficial. Now, when it comes to, your original question was, is there anybody who shouldn't do it or parameters around that. Certainly when it comes to people with diabetes, anybody who has blood sugar problems and is taking medication for that should work with a professional before engaging in intermittent fasting. And taking any kind of blood sugar lowering medications and then not eating can be problematic. And so that is definitely one group of people that should work with a practitioner if they're considering intermittent fasting. But that said, it could potentially be beneficial for people with high insulin levels.
Mm-hmm. And are we getting actually a better, stronger digestive system by doing this, by allowing our body to have a break from digesting? Does that increase our digestive enzymes or our ability to break down the foods properly?
Well, potentially. Like I was saying before, every time we eat, the whole digestive tract, but especially the pancreas, has to produce enzymes to help us break down our food. And the pancreas can become tired after having, if it has to work every hour, every 2 hours, because you're snacking or grazing all day. And so by going longer between meals or occasionally taking breaks between meals, for example, that does essentially allow the pancreas to rest, in addition to the rest of the digestive tract, the liver as well. And so there is a certain amount of, there's the notion of actually letting your digestion and that process take a bit of a break.
So we're seeing some weight loss, some better digestion. Are there any other things you see when people start to choose to have a fast every day?
Mm-hmm. So what happens when we go about 12 hours after, 12 hours since our last meal or 12 hours since we've eaten? The body will go through a few stages, but at this roughly 12-hour mark, depending on the person, you switch into this fasted, what's called the fasted state. And this is characterized by a change in your metabolism on a number of levels. Things that happen in the liver changes, and which is quite important for the whole body and elsewhere. For example, you start to produce a hormone called glucagon, which you can consider to be sort of the opposite of insulin. Insulin causes us to store energy. Glucagon causes us to release stored energy. And so this is something that doesn't happen unless we haven't been eating for a while. And another thing that, after this 12-hour mark or when you're going into this fasted state, your body will start to undergo a process called autophagy, which is like it's clearing out cellular junk. And so this can potentially be beneficial for metabolism in general. You could call it a little bit of a detox. There's been some research to point to the fact this may be beneficial for the brain. Clearing out cellular junk in the brain is a good thing. And so there may be benefits beyond, say, just weight loss.
So it sounds also like it would be cleaning up the immune system when it's cleaning up junk that no longer serves the body.
Yeah. Again, shorter fasts can prime the immune system as well as the whole metabolism, in a number of ways.
In practicality, how is it good to start this? Do you start very gently and just nudge it a little bit, maybe an hour or 2 hours? How would you start it to create a successful intermittent fasting program?
Well, a few things to know is that, first of all, you aren't technically fasting unless you have gone without food for at least 12 hours. And so don't tell yourself you're fasting because you have skipped a snack or skipped a meal. you're not getting those benefits until you've gone for at least that 12-hour period. And that's easy enough to do. And many of us do that naturally just between, supper and breakfast. Depending on when you have those meals, you've gone 12 hours. So this action is already happening. So that's the first thing to know. Second thing to know is that just reducing your calories is not fasting. So, I've heard people say, well, on 2 days a week, I'm just going to eat 500 calories. But that, if you're spreading that 500 calories throughout the day and you're not going that 12 hours, that is also not fasting. So it's important to know that. It's also important to know that there is a big difference in how men and women react to intermittent fasting. And so women do generally need to go slower. Women do experience different effects from fasting or caloric restriction than men do. It can, if it's taken too far to an extreme, you go too long or restrict calories too much. In other words, you're fasting day after day. That can potentially interfere with hormones, possibly mood, possibly sleep, menstrual cycle. And so women do need to go slower. And again, I like especially women to be working with an experienced practitioner, their naturopathic doctor, for example, or somebody who knows about this. Now, all that said, there are lots of different ways of fasting. Now, there was different methods in terms of breaking down the time of when you're eating and not eating. The most common one is this 16-8 system. So you're very, very often it's, eating for 8 hours a day and then fasting for 16 hours. So let's say you have breakfast 11 a.m. You can eat, as often as you want until, say, 7 p.m., and then you don't eat again until 11 a.m. the next day. Now, that is a typical, as I said, it's like the 8-16 method. However, for women, you might want to start with 14 hours of fasting or less, because, again, you have to go slower. Women should go slower. Other ways of doing it is a 24-hour fast that happens once or twice a week. And that sounds tougher, but, in fact, a typical 24-hour fast would be, let's say you have dinner on Wednesday, and you don't eat again until dinner on Thursday. You've gone, you know, you've eaten dinner on both days, both Wednesday and Thursday. You've had a meal, but you've gone 24 hours between. So that is another method. And there's all kinds of different methods.
Wow. And you would be hydrating the whole time to keep fluids in.
Yes. And so, yeah, what you're doing when you're not eating is very important, of course, to the success of your fast. Hydrating is very important, not just water, but water and electrolytes, so a pinch of salt in that water, or some bone broth. For example, this typically will have some salt in it. It does contain some amino acids, but that's not usually enough to break the fasting state. So that's something I recommend is, salted water and or bone broth to stay hydrated. That's a really important point.
Well, that's very interesting. For women, if they're going to have one or two days off a week where it's a 24-hour fast, is there any benefit to going beyond that, or can that kind of cause concern over the hormones being balanced?
Yeah, more than 2 hours per week of the 24-hour fast, then you're literally getting into a situation where it can be hard to get enough calories in because you simply don't have enough hours in the week to be getting those calories in. And this is where you can see problems with hormones, with sleep. And so I generally wouldn't encourage most people, and certainly women, to be, you know, doing that 24 hours more than 2 days a week. Yeah.
And why is it so much easier for men to do this?
So unfair, isn't it?
It is.
Men just naturally lose weight easier than women, in part because they tend to have higher muscle mass, which means they have higher metabolism. Their hormones, they're much simpler than ours. They don't have this fluctuating orchestra of hormones the way we do. And so they're simply less variables, and their basal metabolism can often carry them longer without being affected by their caloric restriction. It just is our natures.
Okay. We're going to have to go to a quick break, Kate. And when we come back, we'll talk more about how to eat to make this successful during the eating time. So we'll be right back.